time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
He speaks the truth. This morning's outsiders are Peter Martin, economics editor for The Age, Sinclair Davidson from the School of Economics at the RMIT, and Paula Mathewson, weekly columnist for The Drum and The New Daily. Morning all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Did we all enjoy the rugby?
No.
No.
Oh, there you go.
No. I'm a sports free zone.
Oh, I'm sorry, Paula. Oh, well. Look, well done, All Blacks.
I've often thought. I could never be an ABC radio presenter
because
I'd have to pretend to know about this stuff and care.
I think you've all vastly reassured the RN audience that we're not going to talk about rugby for the next 20 minutes.
Thank God.
Who was playing?
Well, Sinclair might know.
No. Sorry, I'm the worst South African ever.
Despite his distinguished pedigree from across the Indian Ocean, he knows nothing of the game played in heaven. The tabloids this morning, universally, this takes us back to the good old days of the story being leaked to the Murdoch tabs. as a man this morning, they are reporting, well, that a certain thing is under consideration, and that thing is...
'Cause I'm GST.
I'm dynamite.
GST.
And I'll win that fight.
GST. GST.
Watch me explode.
Yes, indeed. In the next months of the Turnbull government, all Australians will be forced to sing bad AC/DC parodies.
Somebody was having far too much fun there, that's for sure.
Peter Martin, this is inevitable, isn't it, that we're gonna talk about the GST in a mature and sensible way?
If the Murdoch tabloids keep doing that, there's another theory about the Murdoch tabloids, a theory I subscribe to, although I don't know, Jonathan. It's that they don't, in fact, have a drip from the government anymore. Now, what would you do in such a situation?
Make stuff up.
You would. You said that. You said that. And there have been a number of examples of this. Just after Turnbull took over, there was a story by the same journalist, a friend of mine, good woman from Adelaide, Samantha Maiden, saying that he was going to change the constitution or change the national anthem, and Turnbull spent the next day saying this is completely wrong. In fact, I told them it was wrong. So the GST, in a way, it's a non-story. We already knew that they're looking at the GST, but I guess we'll keep talking about it.
I think it's interesting, Paula, how this gets handled now, because, I mean, one of the things that Turnbull has been keen on is getting away from what he describes as the rule-in, rule-out kind of politics. You know, he's going to say that things are on the table, and if that's going to be his position, then having to deal with this in a mature way, that's going to be the consequence. He's going to have to say, well, yes, of course Treasury's looking at an increase of the GST.
Yes, this will be, you know, one of the biggest challenges for Turnbull, to see whether he can restrain the media in the way that he apparently wishes to ensure that these sorts of things don't run away. But, you know, whether Ms. Maiden got a drip or whether she just decided to naughtily run this story as a piece of speculation, it's going to be useful for Turnbull to at least fly the balloon, see how intensively or not it gets shot down, or whether within this new honeymoon environment people are prepared to at least listen to what he has to say about tax reform.
Does it make sense, Sinclair, as your economist hat on?
Yes, I think looking at all aspects of taxation and spending is probably a good idea. Dealing with the GST up front is probably a very good idea, because if you were to rule it out, everybody would immediately say, oh, we're back to the bad old days. So I think GST is the elephant in the room, and talking about it is probably a good idea. Talking about it early is a good idea.
Peter, I mean, you suggested the possibility of sort of nefarious motives here. I wonder if we were to be truly conspiratorial, to take a week in which Tony Abbott has sort of hogged the headlines, and then to come up on a tax scare story on the Sunday, is that coincidence or is that fiendish cunning?
I don't know, but I do know.
You're not supposed to say that, Peter. You're supposed to be authority.
I'm supposed to know about sport, John. But Abbott. Now that Abbott is gone, Turnbull has, I think, I'd be interested in what Paula thinks about this, unbelievable, probably unprecedented in, you know, the last few generations, reserves of goodwill. And that means that he is someone who could actually pull this off. That is, so much goodwill is there towards him. So much are people prepared to lend him the benefit of the doubt that if Abbott had said this, you know, and Abbott did, and Hockey said it, people had, you know, their backs would be up and they'd say, oh, we don't trust you, you know, how are you going to compensate us and so on. He could pull it off. He's the person who can.
What do you think of that, Paul? I mean, that goodwill thing is a point well made.
Absolutely. And the fact that this then comes on from the, you know, the revisiting of the economic mini summit that Turnbull had with Morrison and the various parties a couple of weeks ago, and then Morrison having another discussion with another bunch of interested parties. You know, we wait for the other shoe to drop tomorrow, and that will be the business community and the social services, social support community coming out and saying, well, yes, we need to have this discussion. If that's what happens, because they have some goodwill for the new leadership as well, then that is then starting to replicate the model that Howard had when he ran the GST the first time. So it may have some success.
The huge and shocking development, Sinclair, would be for Bill Shorten to walk out tomorrow or later on today and say, well, you know, I think there's something to be said for this debate.
Well, I think he might say something along those lines, but perhaps not precisely those very words. I think
it's a tax grab.
The important thing is that I think a change to the GST would have to be taken to a general election, and I think the role which the opposition plays and the Greens play in that would be interesting to watch, because if they were to come out and say, no, we don't particularly want this, they'd be trying to increase their Senate representation, and that would be the way to do that. So to say, well, we might not win in the House of Representatives, but we'll try and increase our Senate numbers.
You're right, though, Paul.
I don't think it would work, by the way.
Sorry,
I really don't. I don't think it would work. Having said that, nothing Shorten can do will work. He will lose the next election, and if he is still there, he is highly likely, I think, to move the one lose the one after. But it's that there is so much, I think, people are tired of the opposition. Everyone in Parliament House, where I work, is tired of the opposition we've had, just tired of everyone hating each other. And they really don't want to return to it. So if Shorten tries that, if Shorten says, oh, well, you know, this much and no further, you know, we're going to completely say this won't happen, I don't think it'll work.
Well, it may or may not work. It's whether or not he will try it, I think, is the issue. Because I think people are going to be a bit annoyed if both the government and the opposition go to the next election both promising to increase the GST. that also is not really going to work well either. And I mean, I think what it does boil down to, of course, is the detail. So we've had four options released this morning in the Herald Sun, and the idea of 15%, which I think if you're going to change the GST, you may as well go big. So go 15, don't go 12.5 or something
silly.
Yes, go, you know. But it's what else happens, what's going to happen to the money, how's it going to be redistributed. So there's a lot of detail in there, and I think that gives the opposition a lot of space to move, because you can't have a thought bubble. I think you've got to go to the population with a reasonably well-developed idea, which John Howard did in 1998. He actually came with a very well-developed idea and ran with it.
Paula Matthewson, I thought your point was interesting, though, in terms of how the opposition plays this, that they could well be wrong-footed by everybody else. You know, that if the welfare sector says, well, actually, if this is appropriately compensated, we don't mind, and it excludes food, and business says, well, actually, this is a coherent thing to do, that, you know, leaves the opposition, for the sake of playing politics, well outside of the body of opinion.
Indeed, they need to be looking very closely at what Kim Beazley got wrong with his campaign against the GST last time. And I think the important thing to remember, I mean, Sinclair says you can't afford to have Labor and the Coalition both promising a GST at the election. But we run that risk because there are Labor state governments that are already asking for an increase to GST. So, you know, we could have an outbreak of agreement. I mean, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Oh, new world, oh, new world.
Un-Australian, that would be.
You're outsiders this morning of Peter Barton, Sinclair Davidson and Paula Matthewson. It's almost 10 to 10 here on Sunday Extra. And, of course, the week past was, well, marked by a return to traditional values.
Our moral obligation is to receive people fleeing for their lives. It's not to provide permanent residency to anyone and everyone who would rather live in a prosperous Western country than their own. This means turning boats around for people coming by sea. It means denying entry at the border for people with no legal right to come. And it means establishing camps for people who currently have nowhere to go. It will require some force. It will require massive logistics and expense. It will gnaw at our consciences. Yet it is the only way to prevent a tide of humanity surging through Europe and quite possibly changing it forever.
What did that make you think, Peter Martin?
Not real good. He said there's no alternative but to put people in camps, but we do far more than that. I mean, effectively, we torture them by pretending we're processing their claims when we're not. I actually think, I want to raise this on this program first, I actually think there's a case for opening all borders. We saw it in Europe. They've done that within Europe, and there's no doubt that the living standards of people on both sides have risen. I see it as the last great oppression, actually, which is that we'll help people, we'll give them aid, but we won't allow them to live where they want to live, which is, I suppose, the best way you can help people. Is Abbott on the wrong side of history? Yes. Will we eventually go as far as I'm suggesting? Probably not. I actually thought it was both funny and sad. I'm sorry.
And Sinclair, there's a coherent economic argument for opening borders. And this pressure doesn't go away, and the pressure is fundamentally the poor world and the rich world.
Yes. Opening borders actually increases wealth for everybody concerned. It increases the size of the market, their gains from trade. We're all better off if we have fewer borders than if we have more borders. And we've seen, as Peter said, the Europeans opened up their internal markets. The United States have got a massive internal market. So decreasing the size of these arbitrary lines that we draw on the map and have different rules on each side of the line actually improves living standards for everybody concerned. So the argument for open borders, which, I mean, as Peter suggests, we'll probably never get to that stage, but sort of having fewer borders, having less onerous borders, allowing people to choose to live where they want actually is better for everybody concerned.
All we need to do, Paula, is wrangle the politics around it to make it possible.
Well, that's right, and it's lovely to hear from two very sensible economists talk about the benefits of open borders, but I'm like the rest of the community who doesn't have an economics background, who doesn't understand how all of these things are interconnected, and you know, we've had many, many years now of people connecting terrorism and asylum seekers and refugees and immigration with the problems that they feel at home in terms of security around jobs and transport and access to education and hospitals. And that is going to take a while to pull apart.
I think that
I'm a little disappointed, I have to say, that Turnbull, Malcolm, the Prime Minister, hasn't already embarked on that task, because it's going to take a while.
And as Abbott suggests when he says that this will imply the use of force, that the problem is big, is insurmountable, is beyond talking and persuasion. It can only be run, in his terms, at the end of a gun, and maybe that's a thing we'll cease to tolerate. On that note, this rugby-free edition of Outsiders will now draw to a close. My thanks to Peter Martin, economics editor at The Age, Sinclair Davidson from the School of Economics at the RMIT University, and Paula Matthewson, weekly columnist for The Drum and The New Daily.